We are using the chat. So I'd like to welcome all of you on the cold days that some of you are definitely having to our conference call for Basic Recreation Finances BF 101 that's hosted from the traditional territory of the Kwinlan Dun First Nation and Tonquoxin Council. So we do have the it should say join the chat in activity 3, which if you're in the chat, then you'll know that that's wrong. But anyway, and open the presentation slides too. And I just have 867201 number, and I'm trying to, Kamanopic, is that your phone number or?
Juliana.
Juliana, thanks. I'm still trying to get to know phone numbers. And 983, is that, whose phone number is 8867983? Somebody who just joined us. Okay, so it's Tracy and Ann maybe? Are they both on the phone?
No, I'm just by myself here. They're not in today. I don't know if they're doing the phone, but I'm just by myself.
Okay.
867983.
Okay, so who has the phone number that's 867201? And they've just muted themselves, so you need to unmute.
Yeah, that's me, Kumunapik.
Hi, Kumunapik. I'm just starting to recognize phone numbers, so thank you for being patient with me. So, Kumunapik, you're going to be after Nathan in our circle, and then Juliana after Kumunapik. So welcome. I hear it's pretty cold all across most of the north except for in Whitehorse. So welcome to the conference call. So last week we talked about some of the financial terms that we use, and also we looked at how budgets are a tool for planning and delivering programs, projects, and events. And so this week we're going to take it past our budget being approved, and we're going to look at how we track and report financial information. Our agenda for today's call will be the same as usual. We'll do some introductions, have some content, and some conversations about that content. And as I mentioned, the call is being recorded for people who can't join. So thank you, those of you who took the time out of your busy schedule and the cold weather in your community to join our call today. So I get the sense that most of you are fairly comfortable handling finances in your area of responsibility. But I'm curious as to whether that's a correct assumption or not. So when you introduce yourself, can you add after your name, community, and role, just kind of how you rate your comfort level with handling finances on a scale of 5 to 1, 5 because the number is higher being you're super comfortable, and 1 being you're not comfortable at all. So we'll just do a quick round in the order you joined the call, so like in 5 seconds. So, Gian, over to you, and then we'll go David, Peter, Isabel. Deanne, I can see you talking, but I can't hear you, and it doesn't show that you're muted, so I'm not sure what's going on there.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm John from Squash Yukon. I would rate myself from 1 to 5. 4 on handling the financial matters.
As a 4 out of 5?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Gian. Okay, and let's go next to David then.
Hi, David. Elder Active, Whitehorse. On a comfort level of finance, I would have to say a 4 to a 5 because I've claimed bankruptcy several times.
Okay. I think you have to feel comfortable if you claim bankruptcy, though, so that's interesting. Thanks for sharing that, David. It's always nice to have some personal information shared, too. So, awesome. Okay, over to you, Peter.
My name is Peter. I'm the Active Living Coordinator with Recreation and Parks Association of the Yukon based in Whitehorse. And I feel probably like a 3 out of 5, maybe. I don't know.
Great. Thank you. And Isabel, do you want to read out what you put in the chat, or do you want me to read it for you? Sometimes when people pop in the chat, they like me to read it for them, but I can see you're right there, so.
I can speak what I wrote. Hi, I'm Isabel. I'm calling from Bakwakada Hinge Junction in the Yukon. I am a program director. I've been in director position for about 3 years now, and I feel at a 4 out of 5 comfortable handling finance.
That's great. Thank you, Isabel. And Trista just popped in the chat that she's from Igneous, Ontario, and I think it's cold there. The cold's gone all the way down the sort of central eastern Canada. And her comfort is 3 out of 5, so thanks for popping that in the chat, and welcome, Trista. Okay, let's go over to Scott, then Nathan, then Kumanopic, then Juliana, and then I noticed that somebody else joined the call, so we'll come over to who just joined us after Juliana. So over to you, Scott.
Hi, Scott Cloutier, Executive Director of the Hay River Youth Center in Hay River, NT, and I give myself about a 4 out of 5.
That's great. It's nice to hear that you guys are comfortable and confident, but that there's still always room to learn a little bit more. So thanks for sharing that, Scott. Nathan, over to you.
Excuse me. My name's Nathan Unnanote. I'm the recreation coordinator for Baker Lake Nunavut. I always did shoebox accounting, so I'd say I'm a 2, maybe a 3, but I'd say more of a 2.
I love that shoebox accounting. I have this picture of a box that's stuffed full of paper. So thanks for that picture, Nathan. Okay, Kumanopic, over to you to introduce yourself and let us know on a scale of 5 to 1 how your comfort level.
Can you guys hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Kumanopic, I'm the recreation coordinator for municipality of Iglinik, and my comfort level is between 3 and 4 out of 5.
That's great. So I'm going to write down 3.5 because I'm going to tell you guys the average afterwards. So thank you for joining us today, Kumanopic. And then we're going to go to Juliana, and then the last phone number that joined the call is an 867-934. So we'll go there after Juliana.
Hi, Juliana here, the manager of college for Cambridge Bay, and I think I'm at 4.6.
That's great. Thanks, Juliana, and welcome today. Is it cold up in Cambridge Bay, too, or did you guys escape it?
Yes, it's extremely cold, but I gave up checking on the temperature, so I just know that I cannot be with my hands out without my gloves for more than 12 seconds, so, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed inside my gloves for you that it warms up. So welcome today. Okay, and
here feels like mine space, so yeah, it's cold.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I feel for you. At least some daylight's coming back slowly, so that's good. So who joined with 867-934 phone number? Is that Trevor or Andrew?
Just true. How do I?
Hi, Trevor. This is Caroline. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. So we're just introducing ourselves. So we know you're Trevor and that you're from Iglulik. And how comfortable are you handling money stuff, where 1 is not comfortable and 5 is you're super comfortable? Can you put a number on that?
Between 2 and 5, and just beginning. I'm new to this.
Great. So Nathan said he's a 2, so would you put yourself around a 2 as well as far as your comfort?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today, and we are in the chat if you happen to have a computer in front of you, but if you don't, that's totally fine. So before we get into this week's content, I'd like to remind you of some of the key things that we do when we prepare a budget. So first, make sure that you show how you get your total for each line. So some of you, if you look at the feedback to other people, you'll see where sometimes I've said, tell me how you come up with $2,400 for staff. Is that two staff and they both cost you $1,200? Is it two staff and one costs $2,000 and one costs $400? So if you're doing a budget and you have a big number that's an expense, it's going to cost you something, make sure you tell us how you get that number. That's really important in a budget. The other thing that's usually important in a budget, unless you're a supervisor, FAO, or someone tells you you don't have to do this, is to make sure that it balances. So make sure that the money that you have coming in or that you think will come in is approximately the same as the money that you think will go out, unless your plan is to make money. So if you plan to make money, then that you want more money coming in than going out. Also, some of you have taken the time to show in-kind contributions. And the one main thing with that is if you show that somebody's going to give you the use of their facility and you say that that facility is going to cost $500 usually, but you don't have to pay for it, make sure that you show that in both your revenue, so incoming, and in your expenses or outgoing, so that you really can balance your budget. So if you think of a teeter-totter or seesaw or whatever in a playground, you know, you probably, I used to love those when I was a child, so they're also fun when you're an adult. But if you think of that, whatever happens on one side, you want to try and get it balanced so that you can balance what's coming in with what's going out. So the other thing that I did do just over the last few days, just to sort of help, is I've added two slides to the presentation slides. And I made two videos that are on YouTube for you to, if you'd like to, look through them and watch them. I use the same forms that we have for this learning event, and it will step you through how to build a budget. And then the next one that I just added is how to track your money for a budget and how you would use that to make a financial report. So those are in there. I used an example from Whale Cove that I heard a couple of years ago. So hopefully they don't mind me sharing their example. So I'm going to start on slide 14, exploring this week's content. So I want you to imagine in your head that you've already prepared your budget and it's been approved. So somebody says, yes, we like your budget. Go ahead, start spending money on your program. So what you need to do next is to use that budget to decide, how much am I going to spend? Where is it going to go? When am I going to spend it? What's going to come in? And so whenever things go out, like you spend something or buy something, or things come in, somebody gives you money or gives you a grant or gives you a donation of groceries, try and write that down on your tracking sheet. Because if you write it down as it happens, it kind of avoids the shoebox effect that Nathan mentioned, because I do the same thing. I have my shoebox, and at the end of the year, I have to remember what everything was. But if I take the time to write it down as I'm putting it in my shoebox, the receipts, then it's much clearer when it comes time to do a financial report. And also, it lets you know where you're at partway through. So you can see, am I on track with spending? Am I spending too much? Do I need to get more revenue? Have the registration fees come in yet? Things like that. So although you have a budget, you still want to know that a budget is like a plan. And as we've talked about before, plans can change. So when you're tracking your finances, it's really important because you're going to show what actually happened compared to what you planned. And then the financial report wraps that all up nicely for you. So some people track money in and out on a piece of paper, some people on an Excel file. Last week, some of you told me about some of the software programs you use. I would suggest if you use the shoebox method or paper tracking, that if you're collecting large sums of money, like Nathan's, your story from last week, that you get somebody to sign to, you know, show that that's actually happened. So there's different ways of tracking our money in and out. So I'd like to just pause for a moment and ask each of you, and you can pass if you want to, but just explain how you track the expenses and revenues or the money in and out for the programs and events that you deliver. So if you explained it last week, just give me like a 10-second update, say, well, as I explained last week, such and such. But if you didn't, just and would like to share with us, let us know. And if you'd like to pass, just say pass, because you can learn a lot from listening to other people as well. So here's the question again, and let's see. We'll still start in the Yukon. I'm going to skip two down. I'm going to three down. Isabel, can we start with you? And then we'll go Trista, Scott, Nathan, and so on through our circle. So in 10 seconds or less, can you describe how you track the expenses and revenues for the programs and events that you deliver?
So I myself have an Excel sheet that I create on the document on a Google Drive that is Sexual Alliance document that I share with our bookkeeper. So she is also backtracking me to make sure we are on the same page, and I keep all my receipts, which I give to her at the end of my project, and then we can balance everything. But the main goal is the live tracking document where we can both see at the same time.
That's great. So then she's kind of checking what you're doing, and you know that she sees what it is, and if she has any questions or you're missing a receipt or something, you can figure that out. That's great. So do you use that like in Google Drive or something like that, or Dropbox?
We use Google Suite as the organization, so Google Drive for those documents.
Great, thanks. So Google Suite is something available, I believe, for nonprofits in particular. So thanks, Isabel. Trista, if you have a chance and want to pop in the chat, you can. But otherwise, let's go to Scott, Nathan, Kumanoptik. Scott, I know you described using your Wave last week, but is there a different – do you also add something to how you track your revenues and expenses?
Well, I mean, yeah, I do everything through Wave, as I mentioned. What's good about that is it's tied to the bank account. So as long as I try to keep, you know, all of our expenses coming on the bank card, then I just have to tag it as it comes into the program. Otherwise, you know, I input invoices and keep receipts and all that kind of stuff.
That's great. So you would cross-reference back and forth because I understand sometimes you don't always get, like if somebody pays you something and it comes in as an electronic fund transfer, you don't always get a clear notice of that. Sometimes it just pops up in your bank statement, right? So I guess that gives you the chance to go back and forth.
Yeah, and what's handy about the program is what you can do is if you know something, like it usually takes a day for something to show up on a bank statement, but you can go ahead and create the expense or the revenue or the income. And then once it hits the bank statement, you just take the two items and merge them together. So pretty handy.
That sounds great. I'm going to have to look at that because maybe it'll help me with my – I have a drawer accounting, not a shoebox, but all my receipts are in the drawer. So thanks. Trista says she uses an Excel spreadsheet as well and has a receipt book that's labeled, so that's really handy. So then you can cross-reference for the events at different locations. So thanks, Trista. Nathan, what do you use for tracking your expenses?
Well, I just use a basic, simple Excel and then write down everything on it. And then I get it approved by the committee and the SAO. And once it's approved, they give me purchase orders. But letting me know, I already know how much I can spend. So I just don't go over that limit. I just keep a mental track of adding everything. And then, like I said, we use purchase orders and then the accountant or the payroll takes care of everything, but I just use Excel to make sure I don't go over. SAO will let me know if I'm getting close to the ceiling. But I think they use ACPAC. It's an older version of Sage. And if there's no money in the funds, it will not generate checks or it will not allow payments to be made until funds are put into it or assigned. I think that's how they do it, like, just to make sure we don't go over.
Yeah, and purchase orders are definitely a very important way of tracking. It's almost like I don't really use them because I'm just work for myself and RP doesn't use them either, but they're definitely useful because you can sort of track that approval process, right? Like you can't, especially for big things, you can't spend it without having that purchase order number. So it's definitely, and it helps keep you on track as well as everybody else on track. So thank you for that. Okay, so let's see here. So Kumanopic, I know you mentioned a little bit about what you do at work. How do you track the money that comes in and goes out?
We get the signatures before any expenses go out and keep a record of signatures, receipts, etc. for the finance director.
That's great. And do they give you like a piece of paper with certain lines and things on it that you're supposed to follow, or do you just write it down on any piece of paper, or do they have like a spreadsheet type thing that's printed?
We do like a budgeting with the mayor and the SAO to give us a view of how much we're going to use for this amount of time. So we go on with special events and whatever we need to buy, we go through purchase orders, keep the receipts, give it to the finance director or the office manager.
That's great, thank you. So there's lots of sort of checkpoints to help you track as you go and to make sure that you're following what the plan was. So thank you.
Yes.
Juliana, I think that you mentioned you used an Excel spreadsheet and you said that it's quite, I recall you talking last week about it being fairly cumbersome. Do you want to add anything to that about tracking money coming in and out?
Yeah, I use an Excel spreadsheet from my side, but I'm always getting from the financial department the general ledger to compare and see. There are lots of accounts, sometimes things they get mix it up, so just I go over just to make sure that the proper code was put to the proper account. We use the POs also. So sometimes we get a PO for $1,000, but we just use 200. So we need to track not just with the POs, but with the actual receipt and expense. But it's what we've been using so far.
Great. So another thing that, you use purchase orders like Nathan mentioned, but also the addition of talking about coding when we're tracking our expenses. So that's another thing. That's like we have codes maybe with the different categories. So you might have one code if you're very small for staff, but you might have lots of codes for staff if you're a big organization. So thanks for adding that to our conversation. Trevor, over to you. Do you kind of do what Kumanopic said and just keep track on paper, or do you do something else if you're spending money or collecting money?
What Kumanopic said, we go to finance office to use POs. That's all I can say.
That's perfect. Thank you. Thanks for adding to that. It sounds like purchase orders in municipalities and hamlets are pretty important. So I think everybody in Nunavut has mentioned using that. So, Guillaume, let's go to you, then David, then Peter. The question again, so in 10 seconds or less, describe how you track what's coming in and going out for the programs or events you deliver.
I give it to the account. Oh, sorry.
We'll go Guillaume and then David. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay, David. You can go. For our squash program, we use the Excel spreadsheet, right? and whatever the money comes in, I'll just put it into the Excel thing, and then I did the sign. It's basically I do it on the paper. Like I do it on the system, and then from the I take the print out, right? And I get it signed from my treasurer, and the treasurer submits. I scan it and I send it to our bookkeeper. So that's how we roll the things.
That's great. Thank you. And over to you, David.
I use Alex.
Okay, so for you need to clarify that because that sounds like you use Wave or something. So can you tell us who Alex is?
Yes. Yeah, Alex is the ED, and I give him the paperwork, and he does the books. The organization uses QuickBooks. Previous when I do stuff on my own, I set up a project in what used to be called Simply Accounting. It's now called Sage 50. So you can see the balance sheet as you're running that project. So, entering in the expenses as you go on a daily basis, you can have a running account of that project. But otherwise, here at Elder Active, I just use Alex.
Yeah, but you're still doing the tracking. You're still doing the tracking, and that's the important thing. Is one thing that you mentioned is that you enter it every time you have an expense. So that's really important. So thank you. Okay, Peter, over to you at the end of this circle. Do you want to tell us in 10 seconds or less how you personally, maybe not RFA, but you personally track expenses and revenues for the programs you run?
I use a spreadsheet, but it is in a like sort of Dropbox for the staff to access as well. We also have a master tracker, but that's more for the whole organization. And then just put placeholders, and when people invoice me, I can remove those placeholders with actual financial information. But yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. So as you can see, there's lots of different things that people do around tracking expenses. Starting with what David said, like I enter them every time they happen right away, through to making sure the codes are correct. You're using purchase orders. You're using Excel spreadsheets. You're writing things on paper and making sure that you've got the right signatures and things like that. And then even going back to what Scott was talking about linking and connecting and making sure it's working with your bank account. And not all of you will have to do that, but there's lots and lots of things that you can do around tracking, and that's probably one of the biggest financial things that you do. So we plan and we have our budget and it gets approved. Then you have to track what you're doing. And then once you finish tracking, that tracking will help you understand the money that's come in, which is your revenue, and the money that's gone out, which is your expenses. And this information is really critical because that's what's needed for the financial report. And you may have financial reports that are due at the end of a project, that are due at the end of each month, that are due at the end of each year or each fiscal quarter. There's lots of different times you might be required to provide a financial report. So making sure that the tracking is done properly will help you with that. So going through some of the slides here, slide 17 points out that you want to make sure all your transactions are entered before you start to do a financial report. There's nothing worse than, or I guess that's slide 18 now, sorry. So before, when the program or event ends, make sure that all your bills are paid, everything's recorded, collect any remaining money or grants that you know is coming in, and then do your financial report. Sometimes we do a financial report to get the money from a funder, and that would just say this is what we're expecting to get from you, and we haven't received it yet, but here's our report. So it is really, the tracking part is really, really important, And there is a template that I've given you online that you can download if you want to use it. It's in Activity 4. You don't have to show me for this week's RLA or required learning activity your tracking. You're only going to show a financial report. But try and do tracking from the budget to the financial report. The financial report, as we said before, so a budget shows what you're going to do, and a financial report shows what you did do. And sometimes those aren't the same two things. So the steps for preparing a financial report are shown on slide 19. And there's some templates that you can use, or you can use your own. When you're doing this week's required learning activity, you might want to watch the YouTube video that I made. It's an amateur video, so I just made it on my computer. But you can find the link. Oh, it says slide 11, but it's actually slide 20. Sorry about that. I didn't change the page number. And it will give you some tips and things like that. I can pop that link into the chat as well. Copy. So there's a link if anyone would like to use that. So one of the things we've sort of talked about, but I haven't used the words yet, and I'd like to talk about this before we wrap up our call, is the idea, and there are two A words, authority and accountability. And there's a difference between the two when we talk about finances. So there's a difference between financial authority and financial accountability. And both of them are pretty big words. Like, in my head, I'm like, okay, so? So that's why we're going to talk about it. Because they're big words, they have a lot of built-in or implied meaning to them. So I'd like to, as a group, kind of come up with what we think of when we hear financial authority or financial accountability. And so I'm going to go in an order. Let's see where we're going to start. I'm going to start with Scott this time, if that's okay with you, Scott. And then we'll go to Nathan and Kumanopic. And again, if you're not sure what to add to the conversation, just say pass. That's okay. We can always come around again another time. So I'm going to pop the question into the chat. David, if the link's not opening, it's in the presentation slides, and I'll email it to you afterwards as well. Okay, so my question here, and as I mentioned, we're going to start with Scott. My question is, what do financial authority and accountability mean, and how are they different, or if you want to say, how are they the same, but let's see if we can figure out how they're different. So we're going to go from Scott to Nathan and then Kumanopic and around our circle. And again, if you need to, just go ahead and pass when we come to your turn if you're not quite sure what you might want to say. So Scott, did you want to jump in?
Sure. To me, authority means like who has the sort of the power or the right within the organization to handle finances, and then accountability is like making sure that like everything is tracked properly, and that, you know, money is spent in the appropriate places.
Great. So in your organization, would you say that some people have one and not the other, or is it shared, or what would you think?
It's definitely some have like there's a lot of people that have financial authority in the organization as far as being signing authorities, but when it comes down to accountability, that's mostly my job as far as making sure that funds are directed appropriately.
Great, thanks for sharing that. And again, we're just weighing in on your ideas. No right or wrong answer here. So Nathan, what do you think of when you hear financial authority and financial accountability? What do they mean to you, and how are they different?
Well, the way the hamlet of Big Lake is run, I see the financial authority as the senior administrative officer, since he's the only one with signing authority with the finance. I can't get anything. I can't get checks. I can't get purchase orders. I can't get anything unless he signs it. And I see the accountability as everyone. Like, he should be accountable if there's money missing, or I should be accountable if it was my responsibility. Like, who's to blame? I think of as accountability, like, if there's money missing or not. Accountability could be for anyone. But I see as financial authority, the buck stops here. Everything goes through him.
That's great. So
that's
even people that don't have, thanks Nathan, so even people without that authority are still accountable or responsible. So you might give somebody $20 cash even from your cash and say go to the store and buy a jug of milk. They're accountable to use that $20 for the jug of milk and bring you the receipt, and if there's any change from it, bring you the change back.
Yes, yeah. Like, accountability can be anyone. Authority is the one who has the final say. That's the way it is.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it. Kumanopik, how do you see a financial authority and financial accountability? Would you agree with what Scott or Nathan have said, or do you see something as being a little different in your community?
Oh, yes. Just like Nathan said, financial authority, the FAO, gives the go-to-you budget and the accountability anyone, like, for example, me, the coordinator, or my partner, the recreation director, has the accountability, gets to use the finances or the budget.
That's great, thanks. So very similar setup then, because you're also working in a Hamlet situation where your FAO has that authority, but you're also accountable and you participate in that accountability piece. So thank you for that. Let's go to Juliana. So again, another example of a Hamlet in Nunavut. How do you see financial authority and accountability, and what do they mean to you, or how are they different?
I think as I'm in South, here we go as the same way as Baker Lake. I have all the accountability and responsibility to use the money to track all the expenses and to make sure that it happens, but I cannot issue a PO or sign a check or anything else that requires the authority that I don't have.
So POs and checks have a different level of authority for them than what it is that you're actually using the money. So the authority comes in, you go and request the PO because you have some accountability for your program. You need to buy material, so you get a purchase order, but somebody else gives it to you, and that's that. They have the authority. You carry out the purchase order the way you're supposed to and give it back to them, and they write the check. So thanks. Trevor, do you see it sort of similar to Nathan and Kumanopik and Juliana, or do you see a difference at all between financial authority and financial accountability?
No. Just like Kumanopik and Nathan, very similar.
Yeah, because you're probably in a position where somebody would tell you what you're allowed to spend, and then you go ahead and do that, and you're accountable for spending it in that way. So I imagine that you're in that same situation. So thank you for sharing that. Let's go to Guillaume, because you work in a different setting than Hamlet in Nunavut. And then David, then Peter, and then Isabel, and then Trista, you can pop in the chat. Oh, you already did. Okay, thanks.
For Squashcon, I do agree with Nathan and other guys. It's the same similar thing, right? Authority is someone who can sign the check and the stuff, who can pass the money around. And accountability is more related with everyone, with whoever have, like, get in a single penny where they're spending, or, you know, from where they're getting. So everybody is accountable for sure. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Kian. Over to you, David. So another example of a nonprofit organization.
I was doing two things here. So the authority is the person who actually has the authority to spend the money. Accountability is, I think, what Yandra said, is everybody. You know, is you can't just be willy-nilly with the money. It's not yours, basically.
Yeah, and you just raised an interesting point. So most people say that authority comes with that position, but what you actually said is authority can also come with the permission from somebody in a higher position than you to spend that money. So that's a different way of looking at it. So thank you. And probably more applicable to a nonprofit.
Generally, you'll see that in the chart of authorities, they delegate who has that authority, and they are the board.
Thank you. Okay, over to you, Peter, and then Isabel. And it's interesting, all the Yukoners are working with nonprofit organizations mostly, and everyone in, well, and NWT too with Scott. So go ahead, Peter.
First, just to clarify, the question was if I have financial authority and financial
accountability.
Right, yeah. I would say that I definitely have a financial accountability in terms of the Real Leader program that we run, but as well as because the programs that I approve are kind of being reflected back on whether I've sort of done the proper assessment of the program and the impact. But even I do have financial authority to make the decisions on approval. Regardless, I typically dialogue with my coworkers a lot about programs, even just so that they know what's going on. But yeah.
That's great. And your authority is probably up to a certain amount as well, right? So you have the authority to make a decision per program about to how much would that be?
Yeah,
up to about $3,000 probably, right, in that case. So thank you.
Yeah,
okay, Isabel, over to you.
It's difficult to add anything better than what's been already said, but when I first heard those two words, accountability and authority, I had to think about it because they're very powerful words. But I think that one can go without it, without the other, but the other one can. If you have authority, the accountability comes there, where you maybe ask for accountability without having the authority, that's for sure. Authority, there's only a few person per organization that have the authority to either give money or ask for money, like grants, as an authorized person needs to be requesting it. The accountability is anyone who's giving some sort of cash or PO or text or needs to be accountable to the person who has given them. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I like how you explain that. Thanks for wrapping it up so nicely. You know, that sometimes you can have accountability goes along with authority. So if you have authority, you're also accountable, but you can have accountability by itself without authority. So that's a really great way of putting it. Tris has popped in the chat, financial accountability is taking responsibility for the finances she's being given to look after. And I think of the word responsibility with accountability, so thank you. And authority is the managers who can grant her a budget and spending privileges, so thanks for adding that in there, Trista. I just would like to add one other thing, and this is from my experience with ARPE, the organization that Peter works with. And Scott, I'm not sure if this applies to your organization and David's too, but there's also different levels of authority. So Peter has a certain authority within the program he's managing to make decisions and to spend money. His executive director grants him that authority, but the board that the executive director is responsible for also grants the executive director a certain amount of authority. So they have the authority to make, she can make decisions up to a certain amount, and then anything after that, the decisions have to go to the board. So there's definitely different levels and things like that. So good way to, good conversation. It's really important to understand those terms when we're talking finances. So we have about 10 minutes left. I just wanted to go through financial statements and then make sure everyone's clear on what we're doing to wrap up this learning event. So on slide 21, you will see that there's a list of three different types of financial statements that you might hear about. And there's likely a lot more that you're familiar with, but these are the three main ones. So an income statement is about what you did, a balance sheet is about what you have, and a cash flow statement is about what cash has come in or when it's come in and out and how much, things like that. So usually an income statement, and this is on slide 22, an income statement shows your revenue less your expenses over a set period of time. So usually it's a year, but it might be different depending on what you're doing, if it's a special project or anything. And the difference that you get when you take the money in minus the money out, the difference we call either net income, which is good, or net loss, which might not be so good in your eyes, depending on what your situation is. Slide 23 introduces balance sheets. And a balance sheet shows your organization's state. So it's kind of like it's health and well-being. So how financially healthy is your organization, or what does it look like? And you find the balance by calculating the assets, which is something that you own, or some, like currently like in the bank, like money, or something that you own long-term, like a building. And then you take away the liabilities to find something called equity. So a liability is something that you owe somebody else, and it could be like a bill, or it could be over a longer term, like a mortgage or a loan or something like that. And then the equity, or sometimes they're called net assets, is the difference between your assets and liabilities. So again, having a positive number is a really good thing on your balance sheet. You've got a bit of a problem if you have a negative number. And then slide 24 describes a cash flow statement. And that is sort of the flow. Think of it as the way that money comes in and out, the mix and the timing, when it comes in and out, how much is coming in and out. So that flow is really important to understand. And I'm going to give you a personal example. I want you to imagine this in your head while I share this. And this is a personal example that I'm sure everyone can relate to about why cash flow is important. So imagine that you have a friend and you loaned your friend $500 for a car or something like that. But your friend hasn't been able to pay you back yet, so you're short $500. But you only have $50 in your bank account, and you have to pay a $200 hydro bill tomorrow. So you have a bit of a cash flow issue. Technically, you should have $550, but because you haven't been paid yet, you can't afford to make the payment on your electric bill because you don't have that money from your friend because they haven't paid you back. So organizations, whether you're a hamlet, municipality, nonprofit, a business, deal with cash flow issues all the time. So money from other levels of government, like for the hamlets in Nunavut, the money from the government in Nunavut sometimes takes longer to get to you. Money from grants for nonprofits might come in slowly. Fundraising that you think you might do is unpredictable. But bills come in every month and salaries still have to be paid. So the cash flow that your organization has can actually make or break your organization. So sometimes the person in authority might say you can't spend that right now, even though it's in your budget. And if they say you can't spend it right now, it could be a cash flow issue. So just keep that part in mind. I'd like to, I did have a question about petty cash, but I'm not going to add that because that would make us go over time. And I know you guys probably either need to warm up, get some lunch, finish your lunch, or get back to work. So let's wrap up our conference call for this learning event. This was BF101 or Basic Recreation Finances. I think everybody on the call pretty much has done their required learning activity that was due on last Sunday, which was a budget. And so this Sunday, your required learning activity is a financial report. So if your budget was from a program or an event that you have not run yet, you just have to make up how much you think it cost and how much came in. So you can do an imaginary tracking and then give a financial report. So the financial report should link back to your budget, so you might want to copy and show your budget in your financial report just so that we have a comparison. And again, I'll make sure that I point out in a follow-up email today where you can find the link to the video I mentioned, and that will explain it to you as well. There's also the feedback in number 7 under week 2. If you could fill out the feedback form, that would be great. And for those of you on the call, just a reminder that next week is a catch-up week. So you have a break from our learning events next week. It's a time to catch your breath because I know you've all been very busy. And then we will restart our core learning event with Manage Risk on February 13th. So if you get all your required learning activities done this week, then you have a break next week. So thank you very much, Nakarmik, Masicho, Kwana, and merci aussi, Isabelle. thanks, everybody. I'll stay on the call after I end the recording. So if you have any questions, please stay. I've got about 15 minutes that I can answer your questions. So thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody.